folks. Guess what comes after hour one? You can count on it. It's called hour two. There's no hour three. So what comes after hour two is hour one again. But hour one, we were talking to Kevin McCullough. I shared some of my thoughts. But hour two, we get to talk to our dear friend. He is on assignment at the Vatican, our friend John Zmierak. John, welcome.
Hi, Eric. How you doing? This is actually behind me is a photo of the National Mall in on December 31st, 2021. I have the photo of the future. So see the rubble behind us?
Wow.
That used to be the Lincoln Memorial. Yeah.
That is unbelievable. Is that as a result of the earthquakes that are coming?
The mole men arise from the underworld and to decide to liberate us from our Bidenist occupational government.
Okay, look, what happened yesterday was, you know, people overuse the term surreal, but it was surreal. I got up 4:45 a.m., which kind of like you, I'm not an early riser, but I got up in Lynchburg, Virginia, so I could catch a flight and arrive in time to watch, you know, no matter where you stand politically, it was bizarre. I mean, to see an inauguration with no people, I guess let me start there, because I would just like to ask folks like you these questions. Maybe you have better answers. I couldn't really figure out why there were no people there. In other words, couldn't you have metal detectors if you were afraid that somebody's going to, like, you know, try to kill the president? Why couldn't they have a crowd? Okay, there's COVID. So what? People wear masks, or you can have a little bit of social distancing. Why were there no crowds for this election? It seems to, for this inauguration, it doesn't seem to make any rational sense.
Well, I didn't watch it even on television. I kind of knew it was happening in the background. It's like knowing the dog pooped in the bedroom, but you don't want to get out of bed and pick it up just yet. So you just kind of let it steep there. I knew that something was being deposited in Washington, D.C., but I didn't particularly want to have to smell it. I'm not surprised there were no crowds at his rallies.
John. Look, that's a separate issue. Let's focus. This is an inaugural. Right. People want to be there because it's historic.
But they know you didn't let me finish my point. He didn't want people at his rallies. He doesn't want people at this. I think the fig leaf of democracy, of popular government in America, is wearing thinner and thinner and thinner. In other words, these people taking over who want to help build back better. I just watched a video on gab.com. of like 20 different leaders, Nancy Pelosi, Tony Blair, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Andrew Cuomo, all reciting the same script, virtually the same words, we must build back better, as if they were robots or members of the Borg, using the phrase build back better, which is, of course, part of the Great Reset. It's something that the World Economic Forum, which is a kind of social club for billionaire social engineers, I think it's where skull and bones go when they get to be middle-aged.
Right.
And they're proposing this agenda that involves stripping us one by one in the name of building back after the pandemic of our property rights, our freedom of travel, our freedom of political activism. I mean, look at what happened to New York City. Is New York City recognizable from what it was, say, a year and a half ago?
I have to tell you, as someone who lives here, technically, honestly, there are things that you can never really explain, where you don't have words to explain. New York right now, everything's the same, and yet everything's different. The buildings are still here. There are people everywhere, just very few of them. And you can't really put your finger on it, but it's kind of like there was this bustle, there was this something. And without that, it's no longer New York City. It is very, very strange. The governor and the mayor have so crippled the economy of this city that it's astonishing. It's astonishing.
I'll tell you, Eric, when I became really worried about America's future was when Andrew Cuomo murdered tens of thousands of elderly patients at nursing homes by dumping COVID patients on them while refusing to send any patients to the ship that Trump had sent or to the Samaritan's Purse Hospital that Franklin Graham had built. He would rather thousands of New Yorkers die than use a ship from Trump or a hospital from Franklin Graham. And he got away with it. He got away with it.
I've just got to push back a little bit here because I don't want to believe this. You believe that for political reasons, genuinely, in other words, not that it was confusion or whatever, you believe Governor Cuomo knew that these people would die and didn't care?
Yes. And the fact that it was repeated in blue state after blue state after blue state, in California, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and it only happened in blue states. Isn't that interesting? Only in blue states, in a coordinated way, were COVID patients dumped in nursing homes rather than using any federal facilities that Trump offered. I think
because they didn't want him to look good. Is that the idea?
That was part of it. That was part of it. They also needed higher virus numbers to justify the crackdown and to justify the breaking the back of small business and gathering all this emergency power in the hands of the governor. You realize that by invoking a virus emergency, they, in a sense, suspended the constitutions of their
state. Yes, I do.
Gretchen Whitmer was ordered by the court to pull back her restrictions because she had violated the state constitution. You notice there are no consequences. Gretchen Whitmer illegally imprisoned millions of Michigan residents in violation of the state constitution. She should be in prison for that. Instead, maybe she'll face a tough election, unless, of course, they steal that election. So what we're seeing
that Democrats have stolen elections, John. That's a scary thing to say.
I know, and I've paid for that
under the totalitarian regime. No, seriously though, everything you're saying is chilling. We need to get these facts out, and I just want to say I'm going to interrupt now and again simply to say, those of us who believe in the God of the Bible, we put our faith in Him despite circumstances, so we're able to look at the darkness of the circumstances because ultimately we have faith in the God of the Bible. We look to Him. We don't look to a political leader or to a political solution. We look ultimately to Him because we don't know the future. But one thing we know is, as people often say, we've read to the end of the book and we know who wins. God wins, truth wins. But God allows horrible things as we're walking through history. And what we're walking through now, the chilling, crushing silencing that is going on right now, when you bring up stuff like this, that's what makes me really angry, because my parents grew up in Europe under communism. I've talked about this many, many times. My dad saw it. My mother grew up under it. It makes me very angry as an American when we allow this kind of thing to creep in. And it stuns me that Americans are so ignorant of what it means to be free that they would put up with this.
And the fact that editors at National Review would endorse the removal from office of President Trump for daring to question manifestly dubious election results and following the provisions of the Constitution to do so because one rally had maybe 50 or 60 people go rogue. If you had applied that standard to the Black Lives Matter riots and the Antifa riots, you would have shut down all those riots. You would have had the National Guard shooting people the way they shot and killed Ashley Babbitt, an unarmed protester who was making a fool of herself in the U.S. Capitol, in the People's Building.
We're gonna be right back, folks, for the whole hour. If he can bear it, we're gonna be talking to our friend John Zmirak. Don't go away.
Make like a Mr. Milk Toast.
Folks, I want to remind you there's a film out called No Safe Spaces. It's about political correctness and all of that madness. Adam Carolla and my friend Dennis Prager are in it. And it is a documentary. You can find it at salemnow.com, salemnow.com. Always use the code Eric. You get 20% off. But there are a number of films there, but that's the one that maybe is most appropriate right now. No Safe Spaces. Go to salemnow.com. A lot of good stuff to watch, as you'll see when you get there. Talking to John Zmierich for the hour. John Zmierich, your background has changed from the National Mall, A Year in the Future, to looks like some kind of a prison camp. What is behind you, my friend?
This is the People's Reeducation Facility where I spent some time recently. I've got a column at stream.org. I renounce Donald Trump and all his works, which of course is a quote from the baptismal ceremony. It's something when you're supposed to renounce Satan.
Don't you say in all his pomps? I just remember that word.
That's the Episcopal translation. That is the Book of Common Prayer Anglo translation. We say, in the Catholic Church, it's all his empty promise, all his works and all his empty promises. And that's
all his pomps. But renounce Donald Trump. So they now, you know, listen, people listening to this program, if they don't know you and they don't know me, they're taking it seriously. Usually the older people are, the less they understand Greg Gutfeld and Tucker Carlson, much less you and me. So we have to be clear. We're joking. We're being sarcastic.
Let me help the older people. I've been called the religious Don Rickles. Okay. I've been compared to Don Rickles. And indeed, he was my childhood
Wait a minute. I'm the religious Don. How dare you?
All right, you're the Protestant Don Rickles.
You're usurping. You're an Adonijah usurper. I call you out. Can I be the Protestant Greek Don Rickles?
That's right. You can be the Don Rickles on one side.
The greatest, funniest, like he is my hero. And
as a child, come on television, I would stand and put my hand on my heart as if it were the national anthem. I'm not making that up. So anyway, I've got a piece at stream.org. I renounce Donald Trump and all his works. This is a response to Katie Couric calling for Americans who support Donald Trump and question the 2020 election to be reeducated and deprogrammed because we are cult members. Half the country, the half that happens not to watch Katie Couric and to have to look up her name when she's quoted to figure out who the hell she is, we need to be reeducated. So I did a little statement and I made a video of it where it looks like I'm a POW making a propaganda broadcast from a North Korean or North Vietnamese prison camp, going through all the reasons that the left wants us to demonize Trump and demonize all his supporters, and why turncoats like the folks running National Review are so eager and enthusiastic to join this new regime and to make any support for populism, any opposition to big business and big wars and big immigration, to make it radioactive, to sprinkle with plutonium everything connected with this presidency and the movement that supported it, so that the conservative movement can go back to being the Washington Nationals, a team full of people who go out there to lose gracefully and make the Harlem Globetrotters look good every single night.
Well,
that's what the conservative movement is to these people.
I've talked to you about, or I emailed with you about the National Review. People like Andrew McCarthy, I mean, if you had said to me 2 years ago that there were some people at National Review who hated Trump, I'd go, okay, I get that. But it seems like I believe they wrote an editorial very recently, unless it was just the article by Andrew McCarthy, saying that, yes, in fact, Trump should be impeached. Absolutely.
He's removed from office and thus made ineligible to run for president ever again.
Right.
Now.
Okay, so what is their case? In other words, let's just get down into the weeds here. Something happened at the Capitol. What bothers me is that we're still not clear on what happened, right? We're not clear on who murdered whom. I know there was a cop that was killed. hey, guess what, folks? Murder is illegal in America. So if somebody did that, it's not like we go, well, it's okay. No, we say that if you murdered someone, you go to jail forever. So I kind of don't know what the problem is. Who is saying that's a good thing? Who knows for a fact what went on, how it happened? We don't know any of that.
Well, you know one thing we do know, Eric? 25 Americans died in the Black Lives Matter riots. And there is a plaza called Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, D.C. Should the mayor of D.C. be impeached for endorsing political violence? Should all the blue state governors who wouldn't use the National Guard to protect billions of dollars worth of small businesses and ethnic neighborhoods, black neighborhoods that were attacked by these dilettante Marxists and the street thugs they recruited to burn a dozen American cities? Kamala Harris went on TV and praised the riots, said that we needed more of them. Michelle Obama, during the Democratic National Convention, basically gave Americans an extortion note. She said, if Americans ever want peace in the streets and want life to go back to normal, they had to vote for Biden, because if Trump got reelected, it would get worse. That's like a guy in pointy roach killer shoes and a double-breasted suit walking up to your business saying, hey, a real nice pawn shop you got here. It'd be a real shame if something were to happen to it. You know what I mean? Michelle Obama tried to extort America. It's just like the mafia that Rudy Giuliani brought to heel. And it's no surprise that these people panic so thoroughly at the sight of Rudy Giuliani, because they're gangsters and they recognized someone who busted the gang once before. So the Democrats were allowed to trash billions of dollars to destroy whole cities. And now they want the federal government, and it probably will, to loot states like Texas and Florida and Oklahoma, where the governors didn't allow this chaos, to loot us to pay to rebuild the cities that they burned down. But we're supposed to regard Donald Trump as some kind of Hitler because a couple of jerks, against his wishes, barged into the Capitol and broke a couple of windows, and the Democrats' police killed one of them.
And by the way, I still don't even know. And look, this may simply be because of my laziness or ignorance. I'm not proud that I don't know it, but I'm not really clear on hardly any of the details. In other words, I know that there were Antifa people and BLM people involved. I mean, that's on record. If you
and there
say
were
that,
police waving people into the Capitol.
Right.
My friends saw that.
If you say these things, people immediately come after you. And what I'm saying is true. We do not know the detail. We don't know how many. We don't know how many of them. But I guess the point is, until we know all that, the idea that the Democrats would use this to silence people for supporting President Trump, as though those people are in danger of being domestic terrorists or in danger of being white nationalists, whatever, that is so despicable and so fundamentally un-American. I will never let that go. That blows my mind that they would go that low. That
Eric, it's getting worse. There's a new domestic terrorism bill that explicitly defines the main terrorism threat as white nationalists, Christian nationalists, and right-wing elements. It specifically defines the ideology of the people that it's supposed to go after, and they're all on the broad right. They're all on the supposed right. In Christian nationalists, they mean people like you and me. They mean any Christian who believes in patriotism and the biblical morality and doesn't have a rainbow flag made out of hemp fiber hanging over the door of their church. But no, this is an explicit strategy, Eric. Yeah. It happened before. In the Jim Crow South, the Ku Klux Klan could break the law with impunity and the government wouldn't enforce the law. Just like Antifa and Black Lives Matter, you can have riots and we'll let you get away with it because you're on our side. If anybody fights back, we arrest them, we imprison them. Look what happened to Kyle Rittenhouse. Look what happened to Mark and Patricia McCluskey. What happened to Jake Gardner. What they're what they're trying to do to anyone who pushes back against their politics. You will have the full weight of the law and more than the law. We will make stuff up to try to put you in prison for life. Our people can riot and burn cities, and we will drop the charges. We'll let them go without bail. That's also what the right-wing mayors in Germany did to the brown shirts.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. Some people know I wrote a book on Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I think there's a copy behind me if you're watching this on video. And the parallels, unfortunately, are chilling. I wish they weren't. They seem to be. We'll be right back talking to John Zamirak. We're the darlings on the sideline, dreaming up such cherished lives. Folks, I want to remind you to go to stream.org, or is it thestream.org?
It's just stream.org.
Why? I literally, to this day, still can't remember it. Stream.org, stream.org. And check out John Zmirak's article at stream.org. And by the way, John, I've been bumped off Twitter. That's the nice way of putting bumped. I've been banned from Twitter again, this time for a full week. First, it was, I think, 24 hours. Then it was a week, and then they pulled that back and it was only 24 hours. But then I think because I shared about Mike Lindell, you know, talking about the idea that the election might not have been on the up and up, they took that off of YouTube. So Zuckerberg and gang took that off YouTube, and then Twitter took me off for the week. So I'm not able to share your videos or anything like that. But hey, that's where we are right now. I want to go back to National Review. I want to ask you again, John, the idea that they would say this president, I think in Andrew McCarthy's article, and you know, these are people, again, I would consider them friends. They're good people, but suddenly there's been this divide where they're saying things. It's like you don't recognize somebody, right? People say that about me. I've gone over to the dark side. I've melted faith and politics, and I've made a religious idol out of Donald Trump. It's all garbage nonsense. But no, there are people, they totally believe this. And you know, we have to have grace because there's so much misunderstanding right now. But the point is that Andrew McCarthy, in his article, National Review, which was last week, he makes the case that it was Trump's not calling for the whole thing to stop that was the real issue. In other words, that even if he didn't incite the riot, which I guess some people are really convinced that he incited a violent riot, I am not one of them, obviously, but they say that, okay, even if he didn't incite the violence, when the violence happened, he should have done something and he didn't. And that's
let's apply that to every blue state governor who let the streets of their cities burn, who let courthouses be attacked by Antifa, who let Antifa and Black Lives Matter use laser pointers to try to permanently blind federal marshals and local police, who attacked the homes of local lawmakers. I am going to hold the Democrats to the same standard that they hold us. And you know what? That's what they can't stand. They can't stand our resistance of their double standards. I've got a piece at the Stream where let me get you the title, because I think it's one of the more important things I've written. So I just want to get – let me dig up the title.
Well, people should go to stream.org.
It's called yes. It's called "For Our Leftist Elites, the Double Standard is Meant to be Blatant." That's the point.
Yeah.
They want to impose a double standard, an explicit double standard.
Dimitude.
Dimitude, right. They want to establish that they are like whites in the Jim Crow South or Muslims in the newly conquered Christian North Africa, that there is a two-tier standard of justice in America. Leftist speech can summon riots. They can actually call for riots. They can do everything but call for people to be explicitly shot down in the street. I mean, remember, Madonna called for burning the White House the day after Trump's inauguration.
But close enough. Okay.
Kathy Griffin marched around with the severed head of Donald Trump in a Photoshop picture. Nobody put her in prison. Nobody said, "Oh my God, now the left is calling for Trump's execution. We have to dial it back. We have to reel it in." No, they didn't. And that's the difference. The left always backs its radicals up to almost the very end. And you see, there were former Weather Underground terrorists involved in running Black Lives Matter, including a woman who bombed the Capitol in the early 1980s. Barack Obama's ghostwriter was Bill Ayers, a former Weather Underground terrorist. None of these people went to prison for very long. And when they got out, the left got them tenured jobs and jobs running foundations. We on the right, in contrast, the moment someone shows up at a rally and his hair isn't properly combed, we're ready to throw him under the bus because we want to make sure nobody confuses us with those vulgar, tacky, dangerous people. That's what's going on at National Review. As far as I'm concerned, that magazine is dead. I will never read anything. If my girlfriend wrote an article in National Review, I would refuse to read it. I hope it dies. I hope it dies. I don't even want to take it over. As far as I'm concerned, the enemies within are the real enemies. People who claim to be conservatives and claim the high ground, we are the real Christian conservatives because we want to beg for scraps from Joe Biden and Planned Parenthood. You vulgar people, a couple of people at your rally got out of control once. The left doesn't do that, and that's why the left wins.
Well, it's interesting. Of course, we all remember that scene from The Untouchables when he says, you know, if they bring a knife, you bring a gun, they send one of yours to the hospital, you send one of theirs to the morgue. You know, I'm not for, you know, upping the ante or anything like that. But you make a really valuable point, John, because it is bizarre to me when people don't get the fundamental point. And that's one of the reasons I appreciate you so much is because, listen, there's a lot to argue about, but let's stick to the basics. Millions and millions and millions of Americans felt disenfranchised. That's why they elected Donald Trump. He fought for them. He actually cares about them and their working class. Like, he doesn't look down on them, even though he's a billionaire and lives, you know, in Mar-a-Lago. He somehow shows them respect. And that really does seem to be the dividing line. And I think if people want to know why I supported Trump, one of the reasons has to do with my working class background, because I grew up among people like that. And Yale did not change me. Thank you, Jesus. And so, well, look, we're out of time. We'll be right back. We've got the rest of the hour with John Zmierich. Don't go away.
I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember.
Folks, welcome back. Talking to John Zmierich, the Eric Metaxas Show. Let me remind you that our principal sponsor is Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com and MyStore.com. If you want to support this show, purchase products at MyStore.com and MyPillow.com and use the code Eric. I would personally appreciate that very much. And by the way, many of my books are now available at MyStore.com. We price them really low so that you won't buy them from Amazon. You'll buy them from mystore.com. And so I just want to say, go to mystore.com, use the code Eric. You go to mypillow.com, use the code Eric. John Zmierich, I was just talking about the disdain that the cultural elites have for Trump voters, for the deplorables, for folks like my mom and dad.
And mine.
And your mom and dad, and the people that we grew up with. And I take that very seriously.
And Eric, that scorn cuts across political lines. The real political divide in America is not ideological. It's a caste system. Some of us are – when Hillary Clinton used the word deplorables, what she really meant was untouchables. She really – the elites in America have formed a kind of Hindu-style caste system where there are some people who are of polite society – And they have certain ways and certain beliefs that don't even need to be discussed. We don't even need to talk about that. That's because they can't talk about it. That's because they have an incoherent worldview where, on the one hand, they accept Darwinian competition and evolution and natural selection as the only source of life on this planet. But on the other hand, they also want to parrot the rhetoric of the civil rights movement of Martin Luther King, which is entirely founded on Christianity. So they have an utterly incoherent worldview that it makes much less sense than Hinduism, much less sense. Hinduism is rocket science compared to what the people at Dalton School and Yale now believe. But what's important is that they're status markers. Oh, you're the kind of person who orders from Abercrombie and Fitch and who goes to elite prep schools and who lives in one of 10 zip codes in America where you don't even need a gun. We're all for gun control because we live in safe neighborhoods, doesn't everybody? The left and elements of the right, the never Trump right, the neocons in their time, these people all agree on who the right sort of person is and who the wrong sort of person is.
Yeah.
And people who followed Donald Trump were like the rebellious untouchables, or Dalits, as they call themselves, oppressed people of India. The untouchables in India traditionally could only do the most disgusting jobs, collecting corpses, dealing with animal waste, cleaning up public toilets. That's what they have in mind for us. And in order to put a veneer of morality over this and pretend that it's anything other than one tribe ruling another the way the Spartans ruled their helots, they use racism. They invoke racism. But they don't point to real racism. They don't point to real bigotry. They point to a Marxist definition of racism, whereby if any person who's white benefits in any way from anything that happens, even if it wasn't intended to be racially discriminatory, that's racist. But blacks and Asians and Muslims can murder people, and it's not racism because they are not in the dominant group. That is a Marxist definition of racism, which unfortunately our Supreme Court wrote into law when they used the term disparate impact. Any policy that accidentally has a disparate impact on people in different races is judged to be racist, even though its intent wasn't. So if you could say that basketball is racist against whites because it favors taller people, and there are a lot of taller people of African descent, except only disadvantaged groups can benefit from this. So what they've done, they've taken a Marxist definition of racism, they're using it to impose an elitist, tribalist, Hindu-style caste system in America. I know it's confusing. You have to go through several logical steps.
Well, it is, and it isn't, John. Cultural Marxism, I mean, I finally understood this sometime this past year, that cultural Marxism is, it's the same concept. You divide and conquer, right? So you divide people into, you are the oppressed workers, and you want to rebel against those who are the factory owners. Okay. Now, we don't have that. We simply have the idea that you're oppressed in some other way simply by the color of your skin or by how you identify sexually or whatever it is, and you're the oppressed group and everyone else is your enemy. And your enemy, meaning, you know, a white guy like me or you, the best we could do is kind of bow and say, I'm really, really guilty and I'm sorry for existing. But
funny thing is, none of this is being done by black people. None of it. It's all being done by rich white elites.
Well, that's
how we know it's a fraud.
All the black people I know are against this stuff.
That's how we know it's a fraud. The Marxists figured out that working class people, the proletariat, people like our parents, wanted nothing to do with them. The hard hats beat up the anti-war demonstrators in the 60s. So the proletariat walked away from communism the way it did in Eastern Europe. So they had to find a new proletariat. So they designated racial minorities, sexual oddballs, billionaires who think they're women, people who want to live in polyamorous relationships. They made up a coalition of so-called victims, and they're using them as a pretext for beating up working class people, black and white, because black Trump supporters get just even more scorn than other blue-collar Trump supporters. So this is a transparent con. It is a means for people like Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey and George Soros and all the elites around the world to crush, humiliate, and totally disempower the working classes in their countries. And to see so-called conservatives at National Review and the American Conservative and all these other now establishment vehicles, to see them collaborate with this, it's like watching Frenchmen who they're seeing the Germans rolling into Paris. You see, these are the Frenchmen who had their newly translated resumes, the ink still wet on them, running up to the German soldiers looking for jobs with the Vichy government. As far as I'm concerned, these people are beneath contempt.
It's baffling to me. I'm always naiver than the next guy. Naiver? More naive than the next guy. And so it's hard for me to process this kind of stuff. But unfortunately, you're speaking a lot of truth. We'll be right back. Final segment with John Zamirak. Hey, folks, talking to John Zamirak. We wanted to end on a positive note, and it's simply impossible for us to do unless we don't talk about current events. And actually, in a way, it's a current event. Yesterday, John, I said it, I think, in the opening segment of Hour One today, I got a box of my new book. And I got to tell you, it is called Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. And the cover is a picture that my mother took of my father on a date in 1958, they went to the Statue of Liberty. How appropriate. So that's my father on the cover. And my mother took the picture and she wants $1,000 for the rights. Just kidding. But
she's,
I'm actually
she's not even Greek. She's not even Greek.
I'm so happy with the book. You gave me a wonderful endorsement for it. It's a crazy story. It's a story of growing up me as an immigrant. It's totally apolitical, as you know. I mean, it's just my story of growing up. So it's not really like a Christian book, and it's not really a conservative book, although it's kind of there in the background, obviously, if my parents, you know, they talk about their communist, you know, experiencing the horrors of communism and stuff. And that sort of it was part of me. But anyway, so the book is out. I just have to announce it.
It's a wonderful story. I'm only partway into it. But what I've read so far, in a sense, Eric, a story like your parents and yours and my parents, grandparents and mine was only possible because of freedom, the freedom that Christianity makes possible by giving us order so that we can have liberty. When you destroy order, liberty vanishes. So your story is a beautiful little vignette of what's right about America and what's in danger right now. What's under threat. Millions of stories like yours will turn out very differently. Will be nipped in the bud through abortion, or directed into poverty, or directed into extremist politics, or stunted, or blighted, poisoned in some way by the profoundly evil ideologies that are running loose in our country now, like a herd of Gadarene swine thundering towards the sea. So reading your book will be a great way to grab onto the rocks so that the swine don't entirely sweep you off the cliff. And I wish that were the blurb I had given you.
Well, the book, as I said, it's called Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. And it is, I don't want to give away too much, but definitely some of it is very funny because it's true. I mean, I wrote about some things that they're totally hilarious, and they're funny in a way because at the time you didn't realize that they were funny. You know, they're these stories or whatever. But so it's a combination of it's some wistful soul searching and so on and so forth and some insane stories. And of course, Yale. I mean, how I experienced, you know, being a working class, you know, kind of a deplorable, showing up at at a place where political correctness had already taken hold. Isn't it amazing? In the early 80s,
the word political, the word politically correct emerged at Yale in the 80s, and it had no trace of irony about it. It was not sarcastic. People would say that's not politically correct, and other people would say, "Oh, okay, I'm sorry." Right. Absolutely dead serious. We were there when the term was still being used with absolute seriousness.
That's right.
And the new word for it is anti-racist, yeah. And woke will someday be right. As sarcastic a comment. Yeah.
Well,
as
it already
political
is
correctness
with me. It already is with us. But I guess the thing is that I remember when I remember somebody telling me, like, I think I said Oriental, and they said, "Oh, no, that's not, no, you can't say that. That's racist. You have to use the word Asian." And I remember, I mean, this is literally like 1982. I remember thinking, wow, I didn't know that. And now I have to tell my parents because they still say Oriental, because, you know, we lived in the backwaters of the working classes where people use words like Oriental. We hadn't been told, but at Yale, we were told. We're out of time. John Zmirak, we love you. Thank you for your time and everything you write. Folks, go to stream.org, and that's it. Thanks.